Welcome back to the Wild Side News. And now, Sydney Wildsmith.
Okay, it's time for the finale. How do we implement Plan B2? That's coming up when your Voice of the Earth continues here on the Wild Side News. We now continue our discussion with Janet Larson, Research Director of the Earth Policy Institute, and take an overview of Plan B, which is gaining momentum around the world as a model for a future that just may work. Certain questions pop up when you're reading a book like this, and one that really struck me was the fact that, for reasons that we could talk about at another time, unfortunately, what is known as kind of the environmental movement has been so politicized and so associated with anti-corporate, anti-business, anti-American politics and left-wing agendas and who knows what all, and radicals and people who just don't really like America. And the total opposite is the case. most environmentalists that I know, people who really care about the earth, are very, very pro-American and very much want jobs and corporations to succeed. But unfortunately, here, because of that dynamic, certain things we could be doing that should be common sense for us and should be simple and we should all welcome aren't being done. Whereas in some countries that haven't suffered from this delusion that environmentalism is somehow who don't suffer from that, they're able to move so much more quickly ahead. I'm sure there are some examples where they're not burdened with this paradox. There are some countries that don't see in this type of environmental and economic manipulation as anti-nationalist or anything, and therefore they're taking actions that are very bold but very effective in dealing with problems like too many cars, too much pollution. A perfect example is Denmark.
In Denmark, the taxes and fees associated with buying a new car sometimes exceed the actual label price for the car. And the families may decide, well, actually, we don't need a second vehicle. And in a number of European cities, they've also really been pioneers in making it easy for people to get around without a car, by bicycle or by rapid transit. Especially in European cities, you know, they were old enough to be designed before the advent of the automobile. Those streets and communities are not equipped for the cars. And one thing that is fairly interesting is the idea of congestion charging. London is one of the most recent examples of this, where Mayor Ken Livingstone started a movement to charge cars driving into the center of London, extra fees during rush hour, and basically to encourage people to get around other ways and not drive if they don't have to. And the results were very promising. Car commuters coming into the city dropped precipitously, and this works especially well when people have alternatives. Here in the United States, many people will say, but I need my automobile, I need my car. But if you step back and you really think about it, you don't necessarily need your car, but what you do need is mobility. You need a way to get where you need to go, when you need to, fast and in comfort. And there are ways to do this without necessarily relying solely on personal automobiles.
And there are so many options, and this is where it starts to come together, that as we start to look at what we can do in terms of coordinating our efforts to clean up our environment, deal with our health, eliminate poverty around the world, really rethink water usage, utilizing tax shifting to change buying and consumer habits without having to mandate anything. Some of these creative uses of, for example, permitting fees for usage of various natural resources like the stumpage fee, but as well the new technologies that are coming online, the new awareness that's happening that we must do this, which certainly is what Plan B is about, and then as well the new technologies that are coming in terms of energy conservation with hybrid electric cars and wind and solar. We started out the program talking about all these terrible problems, but all of a sudden we're now talking about all the possibilities. And that's really what Plan B is about. It really then begs the question, so how in the world now do we start to implement these simple strategies and some, in some cases, complex strategies that can make this difference in a timely fashion? I'd love to hear some of the concepts that are being promoted and the efforts that are being made, because we simply must, or we're going to head into a zone we don't want to go to. So let's now talk about what Lester Brown is proposing in terms of the strategies that are going to get us to that point.
Well, I think on the energy front, we're beginning to see a lot of new synergies that are possible given today's technologies. And one is the ability to power our transportation system largely on renewable energy. So you can have your cities with mass transit transportation systems, but some people will continue to drive cars. But what's exciting is now technology exists to take today's hybrid electric vehicles that you see on the road, like, say, the Toyota Prius that gets double the gas mileage of many of the other cars on the road, take that car, add an extra battery capacity and a plug-in ability, and that would allow you to plug in your car at night, just in your regular old household plug. And if we were to couple that advancement, which those cars are not available on a mass scale yet, but they could be, take that and make a massive investment in wind energy, then you could largely drive your vehicle fleet on free electricity from the wind. Wind is a free source of energy. It leads to, once we scale it up, it can be very cheap. It's also widely distributed. It's everywhere, and it's inexhaustible. So instead of relying on Mideast oil from a particularly volatile region, we could run our transportation system on energy produced at home. And seeing the other pieces of the picture to come together with what we've laid out in Plan B is sort of an earth restoration budget that goes through what we'd need to do to conserve soil, conserve forests, save water. On water, it's amazing the different irrigation technologies can make to water use. In Israel, a very dry country, they've been pioneers in drip irrigation that just delivers water right to crops right where and when they need it instead of flooding entire fields. Those kind of efficiencies, we can be more efficient with water, we can be more efficient from energy, and by restructuring our economic system to make sure that the market does tell the ecological truth, we can move toward these more environmentally friendly technologies at rapid pace.
The book, which the text itself runs about 300 pages, and it's extremely well documented. When you read the book, and we'll talk about where you can get copies, Lester goes into wonderful detail about the five principal areas for the response. One is eradicating poverty and stabilizing populations. And we don't have time in this show to go into all of these, but that's why I encourage people to really take a look at this, because it's really in depth. But eradicating poverty, stabilizing population, process number one. Two, focusing on restoring the earth, really working on cleaning up our environment. Three, feeding 7 billion people well. What a concept. Wouldn't that be nice if we could do that? Four, stabilizing climate. And five, designing sustainable cities. When you kind of visualize that, you begin to say, gosh, that would really make a difference. That would really, truly make a difference on this earth. And what you just talked about a moment ago is what I find so fascinating. And that is, as you said, studies have been done on what would cost us to begin to really put into place the strategies and the people and structures to make these changes. And it's not a lot of money, all things considered. When we start looking at what we spend on different things, whether it be wars or our oil economy or restoring our health due to pollutants and things, talk a little bit about what that comes to. It's a fascinating reality and very encouraging, and ultimately makes the point that this is the kind of thing that we just need to do. We need to change our priorities. It's priority shifting as well.
I think that's exactly right. It's a question of shifting our priorities, and What we detailed is that we have a number of basic social goals that we set forth, being universal primary education, literacy for all children and adults, school lunch programs, assistance to preschool children and pregnant women, reproductive health and family planning, and basic universal health care. And when you add up the cost of each of those basic social goals, we think that would be about $68 billion per year.
Say that again, because that to me, you know, we've spent, some people would say, $1 trillion on our current war. And so you're saying that $68 billion a year on a global basis would help to begin this process.
Yeah, we come up with $68 billion for meeting those basic social goals around the world, not just in a couple of countries here or there. And then we add to that our basic Earth restoration goals, which is reforestation and taking care of topsoil and rangelands and stabilizing our water tables and restoring our fisheries and protecting biological diversity. And you add those up, and we calculated that it would add up to about $93 billion per year. So all told, all the social goals plus the Earth restoration goals, we come to a grand total of $161 billion needed per year.
For the
Which
Earth.
Does sound like a lot until you compare it to, say, the world military budget. And each year, the world is now spending about $975 billion on military expenses.
And so much of that military expense, without getting radically political in any sense of the word, comes from the problems that are caused through the things that we've talked about. The poverty, the deterioration of our societies and cultures, water shortages, political instability, hunger, disease, people who can't function in this Plan A world, and it's leading to instabilities that lead to at least one of the reasons why we have a huge military budget. The point being that, I mean, let's get real, you know? What are we doing? Why are we spending so much money on trying to kill each other for a much smaller amount of money, $161 billion a year, we could literally be working to restore this Earth and lead to peace and sustainability. I think that's a great idea, and that's where Lester really starts to throw down the gauntlet. And he suggests that this is comparable to the efforts that were put forth in industrializing the United States during World War II, that this is really almost like a war footing effort that we need to apply.
And when you look at World War II, almost overnight, we revamped our industries. Instead of making corset manufacturers moved to making armor. And instead of making automobiles, the U.S. automotive industry moved to making planes and tanks, and we had this massive turnaround of the economy almost overnight, and we were able to achieve our goals.
Right, this ramp up to achieve these kinds of things, which then the comparable ramp up here would be to reindustrialize, to get into solar, to get into ethanol production, to deal with all of these problems that we've talked about, and truly transform the world, simply is doable. It's doable at a very affordable cost. So then now we get down to the bottom line. How in the world do we really start to make this happen on a global basis?
I think it takes leadership. As the world's biggest economy, the U.S. is in an excellent position to be that world leader. And I think we can do this while making economic progress and while achieving our other goals, because there's nothing so destabilizing as desperation. And when you have desperation in all these countries that we consider failed or failing states or countries that are at risk, that spirals up and that affects progress worldwide, whereas following Plan B and moving toward a more equitable society, we talk about replacing our fossil fuel-based linear flow throwaway economy with one based on renewable energies, comprehensive reuse and recycling of resources, and, very importantly, a healthy social foundation. If we move towards this, we can take care of many of the world's problems before they spiral out of control.
It's going to take real human leadership, and unfortunately, I think that that's one of the resources that we're lacking in mostly. It's somehow difficult to understand why with organizations like the UN and the various religious communities, the visionaries, people who really are involved, that we can't seem to find that unifying vision and as well a means to deliver that in an inspiring way to get people to turn the corner. It's so simple if we just decide to change our mind. It's the easiest way to make change. We need to make a total commitment to that, but we're all working at it. If you were to talk to individuals out there, what would you recommend that they do?
I think one of the most important things people can do is get politically active. Everybody in the United States has a political representative. They have representatives at the local level, at the state level, and at the national level. Let them know that spending nearly $1 trillion a year on military purposes worldwide is just out of sync with reality. Let them know about the idea of the Plan B budget. Is $161 billion a reasonable expenditure to save civilization, or is that too costly? Educate yourself on environmental issues and educate those around you. Write a letter to the editor of your newspaper. Get other people you know information about the issues and discuss them. We need more dialogue, and then we need more action. And I think at the consumer level, say let your grocery store know that you want to see more fish that's been certified as sustainable, or let your hardware store know you want to buy wood only from sustainably managed sources, and allow your pocketbook to vote. And most importantly, keep involved, don't give up, because I think we're nearing a tipping point, and the awareness on all these environmental issues is really growing. There's never been a better time to get involved, and I think this challenge is something that we need everybody in all sectors of society to get involved with.
Now, one of the most encouraging things is the fact that Lester Brown and Plan B are getting real attention around the world. Leaders are paying attention. Talk about some of the successes that he's having. We don't hear much about Plan B in the United States for various reasons, but really there is a lot of talk about Plan B that's happening. So there is the beginning of a unified awareness that this may be a viable strategy.
I think it's very exciting. We've done Plan B lectures in front of parliamentarians around the world. In China, there was talk from the government of wanting to have come out with a new book called Plan C for China, basically taking these ideas and applying them just to that country. On a more local level, we've talked to local communities in a number of states around the country where they've read the book and want to figure out how to adopt the ideas of Plan B to their local community and what they can do there. So it's very exciting, and it's always great to hear new ideas, because what's exciting about the Plan B economy is it's not a one-size-fits-all thing. Certain energy technologies, for instance, will work better in some places than others. The way we go about meeting our Earth restoration goals will vary depending on the terrain and the climate everywhere, but the basic ideas translate. So hearing from local communities that want to figure out how to apply it locally are very exciting, and these are some things we're hearing from both around the United States and from a number of countries.
Here's the truth. Plan B, it's a book that you really should read. You should get on board and read the book and become aware. And you pick up the book, and it's primarily a lot of text, and it's big. But you know, it reads easily. You can really zip through it and pick up the principles. But I think it's important for people to really get the picture. And this is one book that really kind of puts it all into perspective, the problems and then real viable solutions. So I encourage everybody to pick up a copy of Plan B. And Janet Larson, the research director for the Earth Policy Institute, how can people locate a copy of Plan B?
They can get a copy many ways. One at your local bookstore, they would likely carry it, or you can get it directly from us. If you go to our website, earthpolicy.org, you can order the book online. That's earthpolicy.org, or call us up in Washington, D.C. That's 202-496-9290. And we actually have the entire text of the book available for free online on our website, earthpolicy.org. So if you're not sure, you can take a peek, look through the table of contents, open up any chapter, and you can read it that way. as well. So we wanted to make sure that it would be available to anybody who's interested to see it.
Which is an application, again, of appropriate technology in this modern age, and that is that in the process of looking at it online, you haven't expended any energy to drive to pick it up, buy the book, which costs some trees somewhere, as well as the delivery to get the book to the bookstore and the planes and this and that. So actually, quite honestly, go online, take a look, and you'll be doing everything you can in right form to progress forward. Jenna Larson, Research Director with the Earth Policy Institute, I want to thank you so much for taking this time and being such an articulate and wise spokesperson for the work that Lester Brown and the Institute are doing.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
There is a link to the Earth Policy Institute on today's show page where you can download the entire Plan B for free. That just may be the next step you can take to secure your future and the peace and sustainability of this great little planet Earth. Next week, photographer Jim Mitchum. This is Sidney Wildsmith saying adios until we meet again or anytime on the archives when your voice of the Earth helps to change the world here on the Wild Side News. We'll be right back.